I only care about your archives building.
Well, that's, you know what?
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to City Council. Normally at this time of the day, we have a couple of young folks come in to talk to us about issues affecting youth and children in this city of ours. And so this morning, because most of the schools are running late because of snow, we're not going to have the young people, but we would have had four young people from St. Francis Academy come in and talk to us. And they are doing a project on the city, so I assume that they'll probably be back in the future to talk with us. So we're going to go ahead and begin the regular portion of our City Council meeting. Council, come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Saltzman? Sten?
Here.
Potter?
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity he or she is authorized to represent. Begin with communications. Please read the communication.
Agenda item 166, request of Eileen Stalker to address council regarding limiting adult entertainment venues in the neighborhoods.
Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Would you state your name for the record? And if you have anything to give out to us, please give it to the council clerk. And you have 3 minutes.
Okay. My name is Eileen Stoker. I own Steamer's Restaurant on Northeast Sandy and 83rd. Today I am here to ask the mayor and council members to set limits and have some controls in place for strip clubs, massage parlors, sex toy, and video porn shops. Set limits. How many is too many for our area or any area in Northeast Portland? There are some just down the street or, in fact, right next to schools. Licensing and health department inspections, the same as they do with bars, taverns, lounges, and video poker retailers, that include background checks on all owners, especially those that are money lenders of the establishments. After all, these are risky businesses for any area of town because of the clientele they bring in. I am sure that you will agree that it should be regulated, and because of the lap dancing, simulating sex that is permitted by the Oregon State Supreme Court, the health department should make regular inspections. Lap dancing brings the industry pretty close to prostitution. Now for the cure, neighborhood involvement. Let the neighborhood and business associations have a say about what is right for their areas. Our neighbors feel powerless against an onslaught of porn activity unless you give them a voice to be heard. Set up a citizen group from the local neighborhood and business associations to work with the council to help regulate this industry. Education, some education for schools, parents, and especially the children of the area on how to avoid entrapment into this existence, an existence that robs them of happiness in a normal life to be exploited by adults. Perhaps the council could allocate money from the city's budget to pay for this bit of education, or perhaps a sin tax would be able to support such a program. I am concerned because the Sandy Corridor has a history of problems regarding this for many years now. Unless we regulate it, it will always be a problem. We need to set limits. Our neighbors are being affected by this growing cancer. Last year, a lingerie modeling shop opened across from the Park Rose Hardware Store. It is just down the street from a school, and now we hear that the property that used to house Park Rose Glass Company is going to be a strip club. What can we do? What kind of rights do we have anyway? As citizens and business owners, it is our responsibility to make sure that our neighborhoods are livable for families. We offer services to them and should respect the people we serve so they want to be a part of the community with us. If we as adults find it difficult to deal with this activity in our own neighborhood, just think how it must be for a child. Children should be free to grow up without these added pressures. This can't be part of your vision for us. I know you want more for the people who live in the city you serve. I would like to see our neighborhood with people walking down the street, children on roller skates and riding bikes. When can it happen, and why not now? There is also something else in our past that disturbs me, allowing a child of 14 to strip in a juice bar as long as they are emancipated. Come on, what 14-year-old can make a decision of this magnitude on their own? Only children that have been introduced to abuse, drugs, and a major letdown in their young lives. Why can't we be there to make their lives better with help and social skills and job training so they can get off to a good start? Direct them to the right road, one that leads to happiness and a life of fulfillment, not degradation. I would hope the mayor and the council members would do all they can to ensure each citizen, especially children, are protected and not preyed upon by adult drug dealers, johns, pedophiles that are out to exploit them and ruin their chance for a normal life. Mr. Mayor and council members, I want to thank you in advance for working to help us in our effort to control this activity for the Sandy Boulevard corridor and all neighborhoods in Portland. It may be our past, but it does not have to continue to be our future. Thank you for extending the prostitution and drug-free zone. We have a vision, too, that children should be children for as long as they can.
Ms. Docker, before you leave, this is an area that I've spent some time focusing on in the past. And as you pointed out in your testimony, the state Supreme Court has given some sanction to these kinds of businesses under the provision of the Oregon Constitution's free speech amendment. And in a number of times, by the way, they ruled that these are free speech establishments. So when I was in the Oregon Senate in 1995, I helped craft language that was a constitutional amendment that was referred to the voters that gave the powers, that amended the free speech provision, that gave powers to local governments to regulate, just as you've outlined here, exactly what you've said here, would have given local governments the authority to regulate just in the manner you correctly point out should be done. The voters rejected it. Over 82% voted no. And it was that really narrow, it was just the narrowest. I don't know how much you know about my background, but I'm very careful about protecting free speech rights. But it was the narrowest possible amendment to just strictly allow us to do just what you've said here, regulate them, zone them better than what they are. And the voters turned it down nearly unanimously.
How was it worded, though? Because perhaps they were afraid you were going to be able to regulate everything.
No. That was exactly my concern. That's why I helped craft it.
May I have a copy of that? Because I'd
like
to see
it. Yes, it was a ballot measure in 1996.
Measure 11
in 1996 is a statewide ballot measure. So you can access on the Secretary of State's website the language. And I'd be happy to work with you on if you had another idea.
I do.
Because I agree, and I think most of us here agree totally with your concerns.
Absolutely. Okay. And as commissioner in charge of the neighborhoods, I'd like to set up a meeting with you, the neighborhoods, and the businesses out there
that
to talk about
wonderful.
This. And I'll come out and meet with you folks.
Okay.
So we have...
When would you like to do that?
We have your number, and we will call you and make those arrangements.
Thank you very much.
You've got good energy. I think you're going to get some.
Thanks, folks, for being here. We'll move to that's the only one on the communications, correct?
Right.
We'll move to the consent agenda. Do any commissioners wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Do anybody in this room wish to pull any items from the consent agenda? Please call the roll and vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read the 9:30 time, sir.
Agenda item 167, create a local improvement district to construct street and bridge improvements from the Columbia Slough to Alderwood Road in the Northeast 92nd Drive Local Improvement District.
Mr. Adams.
Thank you, Mayor. I think we're going to hear first from Andrew.
Good morning, Council members. Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. Please bear with me this morning. We have a fair amount of detail to cover, and we do have some housekeeping items, such as amendments to handle, but I'll try to get through this quickly for you. Carla, if we could go ahead and switch to the presentation. This agenda item follows up to the resolution of intent for this LID that was approved by Council on January 31st. With me today are Alan Snook from DKS and Associates. He was the traffic planner on this project, and he was here on January 31st. And also with me is Chief Edwards from the Bureau of Fire, Rescue, and Emergency Services. Just a quick reminder of the project scope. We're seeking council approval to upgrade the existing bridge over the Columbia Slough, extend Northeast 92nd Drive north to Alderwood Road to provide new multiple access points for properties both north and south of the Columbia Slough, and also add a right turn lane from Alderwood Road eastbound to 92nd Drive southbound. This is a map of the LID. It shows the level of remonstrances. The properties that did not remonstrate against formation of the LID are shown in green on this map. As you can see, most properties did not remonstrate against formation of the LID. However, all of the remonstrances that were received came from properties south of the Columbia Slough. One thing I would just like to note for the record, some of the remonstrances have dates stamped on them after the 5 o'clock p.m. February 21st deadline. I made an administrative finding that those remonstrances were timely because the envelope had been stamped with the February 21st date, and then the letter inside got stamped with a February 22nd date. Just to briefly recap the LID, Council accepted petitions on January 31st. These petitions represented 63.8% of the estimated cost of the project. We did achieve majority petition support for this project. We had 100% petition support north of the Slough and less than 100% petition support south of the Slough. We're not proposing to change the project scope nor the assessment methodology. We feel very good about the value engineering that we've done to bring down the cost of the project. The level of remonstrances is at 17.7% of the assessable area. And they tended to be from the properties with the higher assessment. So those remonstrances represented 31.2% of the estimated cost of the LID. The 17.7% of area that remonstrated is significantly below the 60% of area threshold at which the formation of the LID would automatically be defeated and council would not have the prerogative to form the LID. My recommendation to council is to overrule the remonstrances and to form the LID at the second reading of this ordinance. At this point, I would ask to move a motion to amend the ordinance to do two things. One is I've had several property owners express an interest in making some frontage improvements to their private property and potentially incorporating that as extra work in the LID strictly at their own expense, so I'd like to just amend the ordinance to provide for that flexibility. Again, all of those costs would be paid for. So if a property owner wanted to bring their frontage up to abutting standards, they could just add that to the project. We'd fold it into the construction contract for economies of scale. The second and more major amendment is to incorporate the remonstrances because the ordinance that you have before me does not actually have the remonstrances. So why don't I go ahead and hand out the amendment to Carla. So I don't know if you want to move that motion now or if you want to do it later, but at some point we should move a motion to incorporate those remonstrances.
So moved. Are you substituting the whole ordinance, Andrew?
We're not substituting the whole ordinance. We're substituting the provisions that document the level of remonstrances and the specific
I think you need two separate amendments if you're going to do that. You need to make one amendment
yes.
And then make the second amendment.
We'll take the first one. What's the first one, Andrew?
Andrew, the First Amendment?
What's the First Amendment?
The First Amendment, well, please weigh in here if there's a better way to approach this. But in terms of the ordinance itself, the First Amendment is to go ahead and add several sentences at the end of finding number 5. This relates to the extra work. I'll just read: additional work outside these project limits but within the boundaries of the LID may be included in the scope of the LID at the request of the benefiting property owner or property owners, provided that all costs of the work are also paid by the benefiting property owner. These costs for frontage improvement to bring frontage to city standards would be over and above the property or property's assessments for project costs as shown in Exhibit F. So should we just go ahead and move that First Amendment now?
Let's move the first one. Did you move the?
Yep.
Okay, Commissioner Adams moved, and did you second? Okay, please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Seltzman?
Aye.
Stinn?
Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read the second one.
Okay. The second amendment's really minor. I just left out an adjective in a sentence. So in directive B, I just wanted to change owner's share to be property owner's share. So if you want to call a roll call on that.
Okay, do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Seconded. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye.
And then the second major piece of this is to replace Exhibit C with the map of the remonstrances, to replace Exhibit F, which evaluates the level of remonstrances, takes it from 0 to 17.7%, and Exhibit H gets replaced to incorporate the remonstrances in the finding. So if we want to go ahead and do a roll call on that, we can get that done as well.
Can we do that one?
Yeah, those are all motion. Related to the same thing. You can do them with one amendment.
Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second.
It's been seconded. Call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye.
Thank you for your patience on that. Several property owners have inquired as to the feasibility of potentially expanding the LID boundary to spread the cost among a larger number of property owners. Obviously, any new property owners have obviously not been included in the project communication to date and would not know that they would be added to the LID. Alan Snook, who's here at the table with me from DKS and Associates, performed the traffic analysis for this project. Given that his finding that the current LID boundary will be very efficient at capturing special benefit, no changes to the LID boundary are recommended. It is estimated that cut-through traffic that both originates and terminates outside the LID will be very small, i.e. in the single-digit percentages. So nearly all traffic using the new local improvement is expected to originate and or terminate within the LID boundary. Alan, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I would like to. As Andrew mentioned, the
state your name for the record, please.
Alan Snook with DKS Associates. As Andrew mentioned, the percentage of potential cut-through traffic that would be traffic that is originating or destined outside of the LID area is actually very low. It's 1% or lower. So because of the unique nature and location of the project itself, it does specifically benefit the properties within the LID boundary area.
Here's an aerial overview of the project area. You can see the single existing access point shown south of the Columbia Slough in red and the multiple access points north of the Columbia Slough shown in green. So most of my comments today are tailored to properties south of the slough because that's where all the remonstrances came from. But by providing this bridge connection, the properties south of the slough will have all these means of ingress and egress into the area. The project area is shown in blue. Of the two freeway interchanges nearest to the LID, the Killingworth-Sandy interchange is the most congested. The East Columbia to Lombard connector project, currently under construction to the west of this photo and south of the LID boundary, will mitigate congestion on Columbia Boulevard west of I-205, but not at this interchange per se. This up is because several property owners asked, well, why don't we just wait and decide whether to form this LID and see how the East End connector project pans out when construction is complete. So the East End connector project is not going to solve this congestion problem that you see here at this interchange. Alan, do you want to talk about the level of service at this interchange?
Yeah. So as Andrew mentioned, the Killingsworth-Sandy interchange area for 205, the two interchanges we're talking about are the Airport Way interchange to the north up at 205 and the Killingsworth-Sandy interchange to the south. The southern interchange with Killingsworth-Sandy really has about twice as much congestion as far as average potential delay than the Airport Way intersection. There's usually an average of about a minute of delay at that southern interchange at Killingsworth-Sandy, whereas there's only about 30 seconds of potential delay up at the two intersections at the Airport Way. And the project really benefits travel to and access to the north, again, because it's providing ingress and egress to the north. It's providing additional travel routes to the north and to the east along Airport Way, along 205 to the north, and also out along Sandy by providing this connection up to Alderwood, which then crosses underneath 205, and you can get to both Airport Way, 205, and down to Sandy.
And if, Carla, if we can just dim the lights, I just will quickly run through the next couple. This is a picture of the other freeway interchange that Alan mentioned, the Airport Way interchange. Although this interchange is congested, as you can see in this photo, the congestion is more intermittent at this interchange as opposed to Killingsworth Sandy, which has more congestion throughout the day.
Andrew, you may want to put that one up on the screen.
Pardon?
Pardon? Okay. Please go ahead.
Okay. The Port of Portland, as part of the traffic mitigation for the Cascade Station Plan District, has committed to funding $8 million towards improving access to Interstate 205 northbound from Airport Way. This $8 million is over and above their LID assessment for this LID. Now, neither the final design nor the final budget for the interchange improvements at Airport Way has been finalized, but ODOT has a project team in place and has selected a consultant firm to finalize the design and budget of this project. These interchange improvements at Airport Way to 205 northbound would not be funded by this LID, and when complete, should further improve the already existing level of service superiority that Airport Way has over Killingsworth Sandy. However, without council approval of this LID, properties south of the Columbia Slough would have a very circuitous route to this interchange.
Was that Commissioner Adams on the overpass waving at people? My glasses are on.
Maybe. No.
And then the last photo that I just wanted to show you, this is Northwest Alderwood Road looking east, approaching 105th, and I, please bear with me, but streets get renamed a fair amount in Portland, and some of you may know this as Clark Holman, so it gets a little confusing, but this has all been renamed as Alderwood. But this connection underneath I-205 is between those two interchanges, between Killingsworth Sandy and Airport Way, and obviously, as you can see from this photo, Interstate 205 is eliminated as a barrier. And as you can also see from this photo, a truck has already found this route to be a good bypass to the congestion on the nearby freeway interchanges. Absent approval of this LID, properties south of the Columbia Slough would have a very circuitous route to get to this egress. So here's just a quick wrap-up. As we discussed last month, this project takes advantage of an opportunity to upgrade the existing bridge instead of replacing it altogether. I know that the city bridge engineer has some concerns about the approaches up to that bridge, and that bridge is there as long as those approaches are there. Something happened to the bulkheads or the pavement going up to it, it may be a different story. So we'd like to get to that bridge and upgrade it now rather than having to potentially completely replace it later. The new secondary access route south of the Columbia Slough will provide a needed second emergency connection. And again, I have Chief Edward from the Fire Bureau here if you want to ask him any questions. Just to give an example of this, International Paper at 9111 Northeast Columbia Boulevard has an existing building size of approximately 281,000 square feet, and they are south of the slough. That building size of 281,000 square feet is between double and triple the threshold at which fire code requirements mandate a second means of access. So International Paper is not currently in compliance with fire code requirements. This LID will bring them into code compliance. This secondary connection would also avoid a potential de facto moratorium on new development to the extent that there are properties south of the Columbia Slough that are less than 124,000 square feet who wanted to upsize the size of their building to greater than 124,000 square feet. I covered the routine access issue in previous slides. Just to wrap up, my recommendation to council is to move forward with this LID. Given that this is an industry of area and commerce, this project will improve freight and employee mobility for both existing and future businesses. On a final note, before I pass out a few things into the record, one of the things that code requires me to do is to evaluate the financial feasibility of an LID. Code specifies a minimum of a 2-to-1 valuation to assessment ratio. In other words, the collective assessments can't be more than 50% of the value of the properties in the LID. The value, if you take a look at Exhibit F, the valuation of the properties that remonstrated against the LID is 155.8 to 1. So, I mean, that's far in excess of the 2 to 1 threshold, and the overall ratio for all properties in the LID is 144.8 to 1. So, that's a lot of information for you. I know I have Chief Edwards here if you have any questions. I did want to pass out an email from Mr. Howe. He sent this out following the last council hearing. Just wanted to make sure that you had a chance to look at this, and he's with us today, and you can ask him any questions. The other email I'm going to pass out to you is from Dean Phillips of Davis Wright Tremaine, who is counsel to International Paper. I met with them earlier this week, and I made the offer to have a meeting with them this afternoon and bring in Alan Snook, because one of the things International Paper had told me is they didn't understand the assessment methodology and how Alan arrived at the trip volume and the trip split that he did. So I saw this as an opportunity to establish with International Paper the baseline, because what I like to do for all LIDs that have property owners have an understanding of how we arrived at the assessment methodology. I received an email from Mr. Phillips this morning at 8:14 a.m. He declined to meet with Alan and me this afternoon, which I believe is unfortunate because we won't have an opportunity to explain it, further explain how Alan arrived at the numbers. So I think it's fair to say International Paper doesn't understand the assessment methodology, but they're opposed to that assessment methodology, which they don't understand. Any questions by counsel?
I would like to hear from the Fire Bureau about their issues with this area.
My name is Scott Edwards, Deputy Chief Fire Marshal, Portland Fire and Rescue. Mayor, our concerns are at this point, particularly on the south side of the slough, we essentially, by putting in this extension, will double our access for both access and water supply into these areas where we have these potential for extremely large buildings. The way it is now, because of where we need to pick up water and layer our lines and the access coming essentially from one direction, it makes it very difficult for additional companies to come in on large fires where we may have access restricted by hose lays that have already been committed from the one access point. This essentially gives us more options from the north and the south to get into these businesses and establish tactical fire ground operations. Right now we're limited from the single point of access on the east side, and the railroad tracks significantly hamper our access into the area south of the slough from companies responding from the north side down Columbia Boulevard. So it gives us a lot more capability in terms of tactical fire ground operations having those access points. And as mentioned earlier, it is actually a requirement for construction over 124,000 square feet. We have to have two ways in and out, and currently that doesn't exist. And as he mentioned, there is at least one building down there that's already out of compliance that was built prior to these requirements, but by putting this access in there, it will greatly increase the ability to be able to put larger facilities in there without that restriction. So.
Okay, thank you.
Just one final note. Most of the remonstrances, as you see from the remonstrances in front of you, most of them are substantially similar. So they have all been addressed together as one. So there were two remonstrances that were individually written, and the rest of them were pretty much boilerplate.
Thanks, folks. Is there anybody else to testify on this matter? Do we have anybody sign up?
We have six people.
Okay. Please call the first three.
We have Dean Harris, Dean Phillips, and Terry Oftedell.
Please come forward, folks. Thanks for being here this morning. When you speak, please state your name for the record and you each have 3 minutes.
My name is Dean Harris. I'm the plant manager at Owens Broccoli Glass Container. As you can see that from the road at off of 205. I had a prepared speech to talk to. A couple of things came up during the presentation that I would question also. But first of all, as I stated, I'm the plant manager of the Portland plant. We're located at 5850 Northeast 92nd. I'm here today to object to the proposal assessment on our property for local road and stormwater improvements. Our operation contributes $70 million to the local economy through wages, salary, benefits, and purchases. We employ 205 people. Our taxes now annually are $600,000, which is the highest taxes we have on an individual facility in North America. We have 18 facilities in North America now in different states. This is a public road that Owens Broccoli Glass Container already pays taxes to support. We have not requested these improvements. We will not receive any additional savings for these improvements that we are aware of. In our opinion, this assessment is discriminatory to selected taxpayers in the LID district. This also establishes a poor precedent for the overall Portland community. I'm skipping a couple of things because I got some questions at the end. And again, our current taxes are intended to cover these types of projects. We believe, and this is corporate-wide, and I have the ability to speak for the corporation, this is an anti-business assessment that undermines the economic development in Portland. In addition, although I stated that we had $70 million in sales, we're under constant pressures, inflationary pressures, to maintain operations in this country. And this is just another assessment increase in inflationary pressures that hurt our standing in the business in this community. I would request, can I get a copy of the presentation that was given, if that could be emailed to me? You have my email address. I turned that in with a remonstrance just to get some of the pictures, because the one thing I noted in the pictures, it shows Sandy and some other areas that have a high traffic volume where traffic is almost stopped. And I'll tell you, it's basically a parking lot when I leave work, and it's not just those areas, but that bridge picture that goes under 205 on Alderwood, that I come out of that road that's near that, and that's backed up. Now it backs up usually from about 5 o'clock. I don't know when the pictures were taken, but from 5 o'clock on to about 6 o'clock, it's just backed up. And usually going to the light to get on the Airport Way, you can sit there for at least 15 minutes, especially later on in the week, because that road does back up. And it doesn't matter which way you get onto it. And I'm not familiar with the road of Alderwood, but going either way, going up towards Sandy or going towards Airport Way, they are backed up. And usually like in the middle of the day is when you see that kind of traffic where it was shown, demonstrated in the picture. And that's all I have. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Terry Oftedal. I'm the Director of Operations at Yocream International, with manufacturing facilities at Columbia and Northeast 87th in the south part of this LID. I would like to reiterate some testimony that I provided at the last hearing and add two further comments. Last time I did talk about our concerns for life and safety issues around the fact that there is only one access point to this area in the south currently from Columbia Boulevard. And we have, in recent history, had an accident with Columbia Boulevard being closed down, and ammonia fumes exposed in the air, and no way of getting in or out of the area. This would solve that problem, and that is the main reason why we're supporting this. The additional two points that I'd like to make is that there is some question as far as whether there really is benefit to people in the South End by opening this up, and I believe that there is. When the private road through the glass factory was open for our use, a number of us did use it on a regular basis. About 10% of our employees lived north of our factory and found that to be the fastest way in and out for our daily commute, including me. And our local transfer truck, we have a a distribution partner for our frozen product in the north side of the river. And in the summertime, up to 3 truckloads a day go from our facility up to there and back, which is about 6 trips per day. That's a 53-foot trailer. And our truck driver says that even though there are congestion problems on all of the different options, that when that road was open, that is the preferred way to go. And then the third thing is cost. I believe that if we're going to do this, now is the time to do it. It's never going to become less expensive in the future. We're ultimately the ones that are paying for it, and we would like to do it when it's as cost-effective as possible. So those are the reasons we would like to have you go forward with this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Dean Phillips with Davis Wright Tremaine, and I'm here representing International Paper. And I do have two representatives here, and somehow we got separated on the sign-up sheet. So I would like to defer my time and be assigned with them. I think they're just shortly after me. So I would like to proceed with the call-up, if that pleases the council.
Okay. Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Could you...
The next three are Todd Thompson, Janice Howe.
Let's get the third.
Those your people.
International Paper.
Mr. Howe is our third party.
Oh, you. What about Christopher Korn? Was that? You're not with them. Okay.
Do the other folks?
They get.
Are you prepared?
Let's bring up the three.
Up. Yeah.
Please.
Thank you very much.
You folks speak. Please state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
Dean Phillips, and I'm with Davis Wright Tremaine representing International Paper. And Honorable Mayor and Council members, we do have a problem with this LID, and I think it's only been partially addressed by city staff. And by the way, Mr. Abbey has been very professional in our discussions with him. The reason we declined to meet is because it's very obvious that the city is very supportive of the analysis that has been done by the consultants. And DKS is a recognized traffic consultant, but there are some problems with the analysis. And if we could please have the initial map that was shown for this area. I think it is very apparent what is happening here if you look at the map. In the north area, the green, the largest portion of the green on this map, is property that's owned by the Port of Portland. And that property is contains 422.4 out of the total approximately 800 acres, about 800 acres. 442 acres of it that is owned by the port is about 72%. I said 800 acres. I'm sorry. It's 589 acres. That is the total acres within the LID, according to the consultant's report. 41% of those acres are undevelopable. The south side of the slough that you can see, and the slough is about one-third from the bottom of that map. That divides the north and south areas. The south side of the slough is essentially developed. There's very little development that's going to recur. Any development that happens in there is going to be redevelopment. So what's happened is that the development and the impact in this area is going to happen with the development of the port. Lo and behold, the assessment and the methodology that has been chosen by the consultant is, in fact, a methodology that does not provide a special benefit to the properties in the south side. It really is a methodology that essentially results in a 50-50 charge between the north and the south. That, we think, is fundamentally unfair, and that is a basis upon which we think that the methodology does not stand to the legal test. The legal test is that it needs to be a fair methodology, and it needs to be roughly equivalent to the assessment. International Paper's receiving a $155,000 assessment out of this. There has been no basis on which we are able to determine in discussions with our expert that immediately after these improvements, they will sustain a $155,000 benefit, and that we believe is the standard. And Mr. Howe and Mr. Todd have been gracious enough to extend and defer to me their time, if that pleases the council, and if that's appropriate.
You can't do that. They All right. have to speak for themselves.
All right. Then at
but
this,
I do have a, question that would, in effect, maybe give you an opportunity. I'm really concerned that in your email and from what we've heard from Mr. Abbey that you've refused to meet to understand better the methodology that they use. I don't purport to understand the methodology as well as any of you, but I'm always concerned when a party to any discussion refuses to sit down and reason through why what is. And so I don't need for you to discuss to me the problems with the methodology, but what I am concerned about is that you have neglected to take him up on his offer to explain it, and he seemed to be fairly clear in his testimony that had he had that opportunity, some of the misunderstandings that, well, what he is characterizing as misunderstandings could be cleared up.
I'll be happy to address that, Commissioner Leonard. And it was not so much that we were, I don't think my email said that we would refuse to meet and discuss. We would never refuse to meet and discuss. What it said is,
it says we've concluded that the meeting would most likely not be productive use of the time. And I appreciate that that is a very skilled way of declining to meet, but that's nonetheless what it is.
Well, and let me explain that, is that we declined to meet for this specific reason, and that is that in our meeting we did say that we didn't understand why the consultant came to the conclusion that he did. Regardless of how he came to the conclusion, it was apparent in the meeting that the city had supported the end result of that conclusion. So whether we understand how the consultant got to that conclusion, it is obvious that the city wants to proceed with that methodology.
Let me clear up one misunderstanding in your reasoning. The five of us here represent the city. The staff represents the best work that they can do, but we consistently make decisions here that sometimes is not what the staff recommends to us. So I have to go back to say it kind of ties my hands when I'm hearing from the staff that you're not engaging with them to try to at least boil down what your concerns are, because then it doesn't really give me a lot of room to make an independent judgment. So from what I'm hearing from the staff is you're making an argument that I would like to be able to support based on faulty understanding of their criteria. So I get back to my original concern. That's not helpful to me. And if you misunderstood that what the staff was telling you was what this council would do, I'm sorry about that. But we have quite a record of oftentimes where it makes sense doing something different than what the staff says. But in this case, I don't know how I can do any different.
Well, I appreciate that. And as a matter of fact, what I had talked to Mr. Abbey about was we are certainly willing to meet. What we would think makes most sense in light of the fact that the methodology we think is faulty in its conclusions. Even though we didn't understand the trip analysis and how they could get there, the real problem is with the final conclusion and analysis that says that we are going to assess only 53% of the total assessment to the north side and 47% to the south side. So what we want to do is really talk about how we can look at a methodology that really is more fair to all of the property owners. We are certainly happy and think that that would be a fruitful discussion. And we think what would make the most sense is if the council could give a short hiatus, which should not result in any substantial increase in the process, such as a 2 or 3 week hiatus, to allow us to have those discussions to talk about a methodology that would be more fair. Now, obviously, what that would do is it shifts some costs over to the north side. The result of that may likely be to shift it to the port. They may have some objections, obviously, and that would, you know, we would have to address that issue with the port.
But Commissioner Adams tells me that's exactly what we did last time, was set this over to give you that opportunity.
Well, unfortunately, you know, international paper being what it is, it takes some time for the right people to get, you know, the right information. We were just brought into this a couple of weeks ago. And so that has been our involvement with the project. International's notice of its assessment came in December. So they actually focused on the dollars starting with the December 13th letter, I believe, from staff. So that's been 2 months, essentially, a little over 2 months, but very little over 2 months. So in the grand scheme of things, Commissioner Leonard, that really hasn't been a significant amount of time. I know Mr. Abbey is probably frustrated with this because he's been dealing with the project for 2 years. But the dollar assessment notice just went out in December. And that's, of course, what people respond to when they actually start looking at the dollars.
Your suggestion is for 2 weeks?
We would appreciate that. And that would give us an opportunity, we think, to sit down with Mr. Abbey and the staff and really talk about the methodology, why we think it is an unfair allocation, and hopefully convince them that it is, in fact, an unfair allocation. That seems to us to be a very short hiatus in the scheme of things.
Thank you.
Well, from my perspective, both you and the glass company provide great jobs. I'm very aware of that. And so my inclination would be to help you as much as I can. I'm just telling you that this is not a good entreaty with me to try to do that when you're refusing attempts by the staff to sit down and talk. And I mean, if you do get an extension of time, of course, my reason, if you know, and there's a number of other people here that would have to agree with that, but my reason for doing that would be that you would earnestly sit down and try to find common ground and not use it as a delaying tactic or an opportunity to do something that's not fair.
Two weeks.
Having said that, I want it to be fair. I want to be fair, but this doesn't feel like that's what's happening so far.
I can assure you, Commissioner, I mean, that's why we requested the meeting initially, because we wanted to start the talks with the staff. And that's,
and have a meeting that's productive and then refuse follow-up meetings to understand their method. I mean, that just doesn't make sense to me.
I appreciate your comments. But this is not a delaying tactic. This is simply an opportunity for us so that we can, in fact, have some meaningful discussions.
So I just want to understand, that's the only objection you have to this. If you thought that it was a fair assessment model, then you would be supportive of this proposal.
We think that there are some legal objections, Honorable Mayor, as well to the project. But if we can successfully resolve the allocation method, we certainly will withdraw our objections and proceed, you know, in support of the project. So the short answer to your question is yes. If we will withdraw all of our legal objections that we have for the project if we can come up with a fair allocation method.
And a fair definition would be some independent party or mediator working with the two groups to come to some sort of new model, or is it what your definition of fair would be?
We would be happy to go through a mediation process. If there is a third party available that would help mediate this, we would certainly be open to that. I, you know, quite frankly, even without that expense, I think that we can sit down with staff. I'm confident that we can sit down with staff and come to some at least understanding. Now, the staff may ultimately disagree with us as to what a fair allocation is, but I think that we can get there even without a mediator. I don't think we need a third-party mediator.
Well, I'm as a sponsor of this, I'm comfortable with extending it for 2 weeks, and I appreciate the conversation that you've had with the mayor and Commissioner Leonard. I'm going to take you at face value that, you know, representing your client, that you will enter into these discussions in good faith, and this isn't about trying to stalking horse for trying to scuttle this. So,
and the glass company as well.
And the glass.
Our understanding is that they would participate.
We'd be happy to have any of the other property owners that are, you know, on the south side. I don't think there's any objections coming from the north side. So, anybody that wants to join in those discussions, we have no problem with that.
Is it okay to move this forward 2 weeks?
Thank you very much.
We have more people to testify.
Okay, let's go ahead and hear them.
Is Lise Glancy and Christopher Cornoyer.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, you state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
Good morning, Mayor and Council members. My name is Lise Glancy, representing the Port of Portland, and I'm here really to reiterate the Port's support for the 92nd LID. What I've heard today is it seems like there's an issue about benefit and assessment, and I've asked for the map to be put back up, which shows the access points that currently exist, because I think there's some suggestion that the Port ought to pay a larger share, although the assessment has been based on allowed traffic from allowed development in the LID area. So it doesn't matter whether the south of the slough is developed and the north isn't. The assessment's based on trips that will occur once at the capacity of development that is permitted.
That includes, that assumes Cascade
that
Station.
That assumes Cascade build-out. Station PIC build-out. That's correct. And so if you look at this map, this improvement will provide a second connection from existing businesses along Columbia Boulevard south of the slough, as you've heard. And it provides not a second, but a fourth connection for Cascade Station, Portland International, to the major arterials and freeway system. And at peak times, you've heard that both interchanges, the Airport Way and Killingsworth interchanges, are very congested. In addition to providing a secondary emergency access for those businesses, again, south of the slough, this is not the Port reaping that particular benefit, the 92nd Avenue LID improvements will provide a potential bypass via Alderwood-Holman to the congested interchanges, and that's for both freight and employees. And we have looked at those interchanges, and they are not the Holman Alderwood is not backed up when we have been there at the 5 o'clock and three to 5 o'clock peak time period. This bypass point is relatively uncongested, as you saw. As noted in my previous testimony, the port and developer of Cascade Station has invested substantially in the infrastructure of the area. Over the past 7 years, we've invested $51 million, the port and developer another $60 million, and we have another $8 million on the books to address the Airport Way interchange. So the 92nd LID will further strengthen the transportation system in this area, and given the shared benefits, the cost should be shared as well. And I think there have been some suggestions that big box, this is subsidizing big box development, and that is not true. Again, there are many, plenty of access points north. We already have the Alderwood access point for port properties. To the credit of the city, they've done a great job of value engineering this project down from $3 million to $2.4 million. I think the longer we wait on the project, the costs are going to only go up, and that's unfortunate for all of us. And as I said, the port has been paying its share and continues to in transportation investments in the system. Thank you.
Council, Mr. Mayor, my name is Christopher Cornwaye. I represent a small property owner, Thomas Saunders, who owns a 20,000-square-foot building in the south area of the area in question. I don't have a lot that I'm going to add this morning because you've allowed this to be set over for 2 weeks. I want to assure you that I will participate in the evaluation that is going to, or the discussions that will go on regarding the evaluation method that was made. I do believe that there is a unfair evaluation that's taken place or valuation that's taken place, and I do believe that a small property owner on the south side has a very high assessment to pay for very little value. We currently have no bridge that functions. It's all been blocked off. The property has been utilized to the benefit of the tenants in that structure for some many years, and I see no incentive on our part, at least, to change it. At the same time, we're being assessed over $25,000 to make improvements. We don't have objections to the idea that the transportation system be improved. We just want to make sure that the individuals that are actually benefiting from it are the ones that are paying for that, and in my estimation, due respect to my colleague here at the table, the support of Portland and the development of property for big box stores on the north side that's driving this. And it's our hope that in reevaluating that valuation process, we'll be able to come up with a fair dollar amount to be paid by small business owners on the south side.
Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Is that it?
That's all who signed up.
Okay, so what is the date for the new hearing?
That'll be March 14th.
At 9:30?
Did you need a time certain? Sorry.
Oh, excuse me, just a clarification. So I just want to make sure, Andrew Abbey, LID Administrator, just want to make sure I understand this. So we're going to continue the first reading on March 14th?
Technically, if there are no amendments, you could pass the thing on at the next reading. If there are amendments, you'll need to bring it back again.
Okay, so we're going to move to a second reading on March 14th?
I thought this was the second reading.
No, this...
Well, if there's amendments, obviously we have to set it over substantial right. amendments to another hearing.
Right. If there are amendments, it'll require another hearing.
The idea of this, Andrew, is if there is discussion that both sides agree should maybe cause a different reallocation, that we would have amendments. So,
is there
okay.
We should be open to whatever discussions lead.
Okay, so it sounds to me like I need to schedule a meeting with Alan between now and March 14th, and I'll endeavor to schedule that as quickly as possible, and I'll obviously endeavor to get the meeting notices out in the mail as quickly as possible to everybody. And I think in the interest of expediting this, I'll just send the notices out to the south property owners south of the slough. Anyway, I'll get that meeting scheduled. We'll meet between now and March 14th. We'll come back on March 14th. And
I think you should have a meeting initially with the folks that have come forward with concerns, and then you can have another meeting after that so that you sort of satisfy the requirements of meeting notices and discussions. But I think having an initial quicker one-on-one or small group meeting with those that are objecting would be useful as well.
Okay. Commissioner Adams, one thing that I struggle with a little bit is I try to be fair and objective and consistent with everybody. So I just want to make sure that I don't meet with a subset of property owners and then somebody who wasn't part of that subset complains that they weren't invited to the meeting. So why don't we do this? I'll set up a meeting with
folks. I think
that
the small meeting is just a meeting for information. I mean,
okay.
Part of it you described earlier was the desire to just sit down and explain to them the approach. I don't think that any decision-making should go on there. I think that goes on with a fully noticed sort of meeting if you're going to get into sort of an overall discussion of allocations. But I think an initial meeting to just get them up to speed on approach
okay.
on the allocation.
And I would just add, Andrew, that you know you're hearing the concern, which they argue is the reason for not asking for another meeting, is that there had been some preconceived decision on what the proper allocation should be. I understand you do this all the time and it's frustrating, but to the extent that you can be open to their suggestions, I think that's going to help a lot in us getting a collaborative resolution to this. So if they make an argument that maybe we haven't considered, we should be open to that.
Well, and just to clarify, Commissioner Leonard, the term of frustration used to reference to me is probably not what I would describe my own feelings. I just felt disappointment when I got the email this morning.
I understated them.
Well, I just was disappointed when I got the email this morning because yeah. I thought we were on the right track. So please bear with me, but here's what I'll do. There's just one last check-in on this. I'm going to call everybody who submitted a remonstrance. I think I've got everybody's phone number. I will call everybody in the interest of expediting this. We'll have a small group meeting to exchange information right away. And we'll just focus on those folks for now. I mean, the folks who have submitted the remonstrances. Am I on the right track here?
Well, but obviously, if you think they have a point, you're right. You want to include people that would be then adversely impacted if you change the methodology.
Right. And what I'm saying is if we come up with something that I think the term Mr. Phillips used in our meeting earlier this week is, yeah, well, now we're going to gore somebody else's ox. I mean, I think what we need to do is start with that meeting and figure out what their proposal is. I mean,
right.
Part of my difficulty is I don't have anything specific or substantive to bring to council and say, here's what's being proposed, here's what's the impacts. I mean, I just have vague generalities. There's nothing actionable here. So I think if we have this meeting and there's something specific put on the table, I mean, bottom line is they need to come up with something better than Alan Snook's come up with. And Alan Snook didn't, graduate from college yesterday, and this was his first project. I mean, he's been working on this port area for years. He knows this area like the back of his hand. He's very competent. He's very skilled. He's very professional. So I'm all open to coming up with alternatives. But when we have this informational meeting, they need to put something on the table. If they put something on the table, then I can go back and analyze what the impacts are. And then, of course, I will go contact all the people who are adversely affected, and then, you know, we'll make sure everybody has advance notice of that.
We can't ask any more than that.
I know I've taken a lot of your time today, so I try to be brief, and I probably used all my chits up this morning, but I just felt like there are a lot of details that we needed to cover this
morning. You didn't use up all your chits. It's frustrating, but please persevere.
Andrew, okay. Thank you, Commissioner.
I thought you did.